Places, please. Quiet down. And here we go. And roll camera.
I'm opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, this is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
And welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie.
We're back by popular demand.
That's right, I didn't want to interrupt the song there.
Come on, everybody, strike up the band.
There we go.
We're doing a sequel. That's what we do in Hollywood.
Very fun.
For those of you who are just listening, I'll just try to describe the two ladies dancing.
I was playing my fake, yes. My own joke.
If you haven't guessed by now, we are dissecting Muppets Most Wanted. I'm John Comerford. I'm joined in the studio by Sarah Stratton.
Hello, everybody.
And Sarah Feeney.
Hello.
And in the booth is Phil Svitek, who will chiming in from time to time.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what the ironic part is?
What is that?
Right off the bat, in the song, hopefully, maybe. Nah, it's not right on cue.
Okay.
But they say the sequel's not as good as the first, and unfortunately that may have been the case for me. But we will talk about that. But that doesn't mean it wasn't enjoyable.
No, I really did enjoy it. Since you brought it up, let's jive in. Was this your most wanted, or was it your least liked, or anywhere in between?
Oh, I think it definitely was in between. For me, I have a soft spot in my heart, not for The Muppets 2011, which mm-hmm. is what everyone's referring to as the original, but for me, mm-hmm. I really liked the movies of, like, A Muppet's Christmas Carol mm-hmm. and A Muppet's Treasure Island. And, like, those are the ones that I always think about because they're very much more connected to my childhood. Mm-hmm. And, like, I will always have, like, Bermuda, Bahamas, like, always associated with Muppets. For me, I think that they did a really good job. As I was telling you guys earlier, I need to go back and see this with, like, an 8-year-old. Just because I'm very curious to see their reactions as opposed to mine, because I thought that a lot of the, I don't know, I guess more adult humor was very on par. It was there. It was throughout the movie. It was hitting on different notes, different levels, like, in physical comedy as well as in lines. So I thought that was really fun. And I definitely had a few, like, laugh out loud moments.
I agree. I mean, this was a really fun sequel, I guess you can say, as a collective whole. I like the audience and the cast members that were involved with it, like Ricky, Ty Burrell, Tina Fey. Like, I thought their characters were really fun and strong to bring the adult audience in. And then, you had the lovable Muppets that we all grew up with and love and stuff. So I think there was a nice balance between the kid demographic and the adults within this movie. And then, you know, their self-awarenesses throughout and their self-digs at each other and just, like, references back to the original movies that there was lines like, we did a whole movie about him coming back. And so they're making fun of themselves in that way, which the older audience would enjoy as well throughout. So I think overall it was a really fun movie to watch.
I enjoyed it too. I really liked it. You know, and I think about the Muppets movies, and I go back to the originals as well, meaning the original Muppet movie way back when. But I always look at this and I go, they have an insurmountable task because they have to hit all kind of demographics for the little kids who love Muppets and for everybody who's grown up with them now who wants to see them again. It's like, I don't know how they do it. But they manage to, because everything you want in a Muppet movie is in the movie. There are great numbers. There are great cameos. You have all the characters from the Muppets that you love, and they all have their moments. And they managed to do it. They managed to put it together.
I
don't know how they do
it. For me, what was fun, you know, we're going to be talking about for the older audience, you know, and perhaps let's say if you're 16 or upward, you'll probably enjoy this discussion. If you're a little bit younger, perhaps not so much. I don't know. But the first Muppet movie was back in 1979. And, you know, as they joked about it in the song that we just listened to as well, you know, it's technically not the sequel. There's been some before. So 8 total Muppet movies. Mm-hmm. You got the Muppet movie, which came out, the Muppets, which came out in 2011. The Muppet movie came out in 79. This isn't chronological because I'm just reading it according to a weird list.
Yeah.
Muppet Treasure Island.
Yep.
The Woo-hoo! Great Muppet Caper. Mm-hmm. The Muppet Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. The Muppets Take Manhattan. Muppets Most Wanted. And Muppets from Space.
Yep.
I mean, they really do span the board. To me, it was funny that I think that in this movie, you know, they're capsulating this audience who I think was very connected to the 2011 film.
Yeah, they were really capitalizing.
And, like, that's where they were really drawing from. And I don't know exactly how, if I like that or not, just because, to me, that wasn't the foundation of the Muppets in my life.
Right.
And on top of that, like, this was very much a another caper film.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
they have done before. And, like, in the past, like, a lot of it's been, you know, expansive, like, in space. Right. And they like to pull in these very different genres. So, to me, it was interesting that they chose to revisit the genre again. I think they did it well. Mm-hmm. I think that they, like, were influenced, obviously, by the music, the style. To me, it worked. It felt very much the caper formula. But I was a little surprised. I was surprised
that they went to the caper.
I don't know what they would have gone for. Like, Muppets Horror might not work so well.
Yeah, and I was like, what do you, what, you know, and to speak to what you were talking about, how they kind of, well, and what you mentioned, Marissa, as well, where they were talking about how we just did a whole movie about him joining and now he's going to. So, I mean, that was very tenuous, that connection. But I think you're right. I think they were going, okay, how do we capitalize upon the success of the last one and keep that audience staying having fun and still bringing other new audience to it and keep our old audience as well.
Yeah,
so it's like, I don't know how they try to do that. And so that tenuousness about, oh, okay, let's wink and nod about the fact that, okay, we just did one, but this isn't really a sequel, but it is because we have to. It was, but because it's the Muppets, they can get away with all kinds of crap.
That's true.
Oh, true. And I think having the whole movie set in a different country as well kind of brings the European demographic into it as well, which I think that was pretty smart on their part.
Yeah, and I think it is also fun, like, revisiting, because, like, they had centuries. And one thing that the Muppet Corporation Company, although I know that they've exchanged hands throughout the years, has done is they can push storylines for forever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, specifically the one that I think comes to most people's minds, and mine included, is the story of Kermit and Miss Piggy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like, and the debates about how, if they're married or not. And it literally has been going on for, what, half a century that they've had this question that they've not answered. And I'm just like, and you can, like, because Muppets have had appearances on talk shows, TV shows, the Today Show, Good Morning America, everything. And it always comes up. And the actors and the characters, they always just keep avoiding the conversation or, like, going back a little bit on their word or whatnot. Well,
then, have they ever been married? No.
It's that's debatable.
Oh, is it
First
really?
Of all, okay. They played a married couple in A Muppet's Christmas Carol. That did happen. They were married in that.
But as characters, I can't remember. Yeah, as characters.
But, there's been debates, over the years. I know that.
Well, yeah, but if you take this one.
No, but Miss Piggy at one point had a marriage license.
but if Miss Piggy could have doctored that up herself.
I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. And, Kermit's, said that they're together and then not together. Like, they've. Every 5 years or so, it gets brought up, and then they switch it around.
Common law.
I think that's a funny run-on joke, because even in this movie, they bring that up again.
Yeah.
But they kind of give the audience the glimpse of what their lives could be if they were together and they were married, they had kids.
And what I love
so
is
we kind of got children. Those answers.
It's
a little
the Muppets
bit.
And it creates such debate. I'm going, it doesn't matter. Why are you so invested? Just watch it and enjoy. Why are you trying to figure out the actual domestic alliance between two Muppets?
Because people want to know. There's a curiosity. Ridiculous.
Well, are there any other Muppets that are actually married?
Well, I won't, before, you know, this partly may explain some of it, perhaps not, but, before we fully dive into the story, Sarah mentioned that kind of it's been taken over several times. So the first Muppet movie in 79 was made by Associated Film District. Then we went to Universal. Then we went to TriStar. Then Buena Vista. Then Buena Vista again. Then back. Then to Sony. Now we're back with Buena Vista. So the fact that it's been, between different studios, each of them may have had a different goal.
Yeah.
You can find, I'm sure, some explanation as to the progression of Piggy and Kermit and why that is.
It's like, I'm going, why, who cares? I just... Because why let the facts get in the way of a good story? I mean, they're Muppets. I mean, I know people get invested in them. But, I mean, isn't it okay if they, play fast and loose with the truth?
But the Muppet Corporation as a company, the thing that, makes it thrive is that they've created this world of Muppets, marionette puppets or whatnot. Yeah. And it's not separate. It's inclusive in human reality. So, in, the 2011, you've got brothers that are, not interspecies, but like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yeah. Crossbred. So it's
beneficial to have people invested in the Muppets as real people and as their relationships, because it's adding to their world.
No, I think that part's funny. I laugh at, and probably maybe I shouldn't, but I laugh at people who get so invested that they're having debates. I mean, literal, you know, physical.
While we're on, you know, if we're going to talk about Piggy and Kermit, let's take a step back. Let's, you know, and we'll dive into the movie at hand. But for me, one of the biggest, most frustrating things as a child, I just hated Piggy. Mm-hmm. And I, for the life of me, I don't understand why she's
Phil
included
is not
as many
a Piggy
times.
Fan.
I'm not, because, you know, to me, here's this great, nice guy, and here's this sadistic wife, not wife, whatever you want to call her. And she's just I don't see him ever being happy with her at all. And to me, that's a sad message to tell kids. And I was like, why would I want something like that?
Well, that's true. It's maybe not the best message for kids, but I think the adults love it because they get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what's fun about it. It's like these two creatures should never be together. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like Ralph Cramden going way back to the Honeymooners. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think that the other funny part is, like, I mean, Kermit, although somewhere underneath it all, we get the understanding that he does have a love of Piggy. Mm-hmm. It's very much focused on the fact that he does not want to marry her because he thinks she's a little bit cuckoo.
and who can't relate?
But I am one of those. Piggy's not my favorite Muppet by any means. But I think that does add something. You kind of need that. Love everyone. You need the absurdism.
And it adds some drama in it. And I get if you don't like Piggy, there's probably too much of her in the movie. Mm-hmm. And if you do like it, there's probably not enough. But I don't really have
you
one way or another.
You want the five Celine Dion songs?
No.
I mean, but who doesn't?
No. But the one thing, that they always use her to great effect in terms of, you know, helping Kermit along his arc and all that other stuff. So they, you know, they use it to great effect is my point. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's a very good foil.
That's what I mean, moving
the plot along.
But, you know, I can understand Phil's point completely. She's a horrible role model. But, you know, some people are going to argue, well, no, she's strong, she's independent, she knows what she wants. But, of course, what she wants is a guy. Anyway, it's just, all right, whatever. So
debatable.
Yeah, exactly.
For children's values.
So, all right, but let's get into this story more about this particular one, because I've alluded to the idea that, okay, it's not really a sequel, because they're not, I mean, they're starting where the other one left off, and that's pretty much it, because it's really about the caper.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that you enjoyed this. Did you like this story about the caper and that part of it?
I liked it. It was fun. I think we've heard the story of your evil twin out there in the world so many times that I was like, okay, they can have fun with this, especially being Muppets. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen another version of Kermit.
Yeah,
really.
That's what I thought was very interesting.
I thought they really played that to their advantage.
Some people didn't like it because they didn't want to see Kermit in a bad light. And I'm going, it's not Kermit. But again, they have trouble realizing that it's not Kermit.
The mole gets covered.
Yeah, it's Constantine. They're so used to Kermit, the iconic figure, doing mean things they just had a hard time with. And I go, it's not Kermit.
That didn't cross my mind at all. Like, I thought that it was fun that they gave the different version. I also thought that, as Marissa mentioned, the whole world venue lent itself very well to the comedy in this movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, just the different cities, in particular, like the accent work, dialect work.
Yeah.
I thought that added so much humor for me, and I loved it. So how the caper took them there and took them through both, like, kind of like historical
this tour of Europe
and all these different places. I thought it was very well put together.
Mm-hmm.
There obviously were certain things that were so obvious that it made me question. So, for instance, when Ricky Gervais shows up and his name's Bad Guy, like, and you're like, see,
Bad Guy.
And then I'm like double thinking myself, being like, but wait, maybe it's too obvious. Maybe it's not. Maybe he really is the good guy. I'm like, no, it's the Muppets. What am I thinking?
Right.
But so I liked that. I thought that, and having, you know, the two bad guys and their relationship as well, and not just so focused on one, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and I like the American kind of humor towards the Europeans, like digging.
And vice versa.
And back and forth. But it shows that the two countries, they have problems with each other, mm-hmm. but they can still work together and have fun mm-hmm. during it. And just like the American point of view, be like your cars and your your buildings mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I thought that was fun to watch.
Even
especially
the cup
for
of
the
coffee.
Adult. Yeah. just like the American compared to the European yeah. mm-hmm. things back and forth mm-hmm. was fun.
Well, I'm trying to remember all of the movies, Muppet movies. I'm trying to remember when they had a Muppet as a bad guy. Or you know, one
oh,
of
I'd
our
have
guys.
To,
you know,
have
and
to
obviously
write
this
back,
wasn't yeah. our you know, he's mm-hmm. he's Kermit, but not Kermit because obviously
I mean,
he's Constantine.
You have kind of like always the downers
yeah.
of the Muppets.
Yeah.
Like in mm-hmm. the two like
but
older gentlemen.
This for me was the first time they actually took a character and yeah, obviously he's not Kermit, but you know, it's like that's a great little twist there because we've never really seen a Muppet as the bad guy. Usually a human that's the bad guy.
Typically,
is my point.
Right. Yes.
And this was great. I liked that and I love seeing Constantine in the shadows kick ass. It reminded me of Yoda, you know, with the little
right.
tiny Yoda, the green, you know, spinning around.
How
like a
did
Jedi.
You feel about like, so you do, you, were you a fan of the, I guess about it's not, the special effects movements of Constantine?
Well, the first time when he's in the gulag and he's all in shadows beating the crap out of him, that was hysterical.
And
I loved it.
Yeah, I loved how he had the robe you know, to yeah. make him look like he is mm-hmm. a dark, bad yeah. character
the
and
ninja
stuff.
For crying out loud.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I definitely liked like the ninja aspect. I was a little taken back at first uh-huh. with all of his fighting style because I very much like just more of the, I guess, natural puppet aspect.
Oh, I see.
Than, like,
you didn't,
the
yeah, you didn't go for that part.
Special effects.
I thought it was much more successful in shadow because that part, I thought they just keep it in shadow every once in a while when you see him, you know. I just liked him jumping and doing all the parkour stuff.
Yeah. But I think that was well done to show the audience yeah. that this is really a different character.
Yeah.
He, even though he looks like Kermit, he's a completely
yeah.
different
he has
person.
Different movements.
That was a great setup.
And even his mentality that yeah. Constantine always thought of himself higher well, than, you know, Lemur. Always
number one.
Like, space bar.
That was a great line. Space bar. Definitely good moment. Also, just a side note, or, like, to make this, typically we use green mm-hmm. screen.
Yeah.
But because of the fact that Kermit and Constantine are both green, they had mm-hmm. to switch to blue screen for mm-hmm. this movie just to make it original. So that's just, like, a little side note, mm-hmm. things they have to adjust to deal with a very
Absolutely.
Green
right.
frog.
Not easy being green.
No.
You know what I found?
So many adjustments.
I found this little tidbit interesting. You know, we haven't gotten it yet, but James Bobbin, who was the director, but he was also the one of the co-writers. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we talked. I think you guys mentioned that he did Flight of Conchords as
right.
a writer, but then earlier on, he was a writer on the Ali G Show of all
right.
shows.
I know,
and I found that interesting.
Very.
You know, in terms of the comedy, and so he's one of two directors to direct multiple Muppet movies. You know, mm-hmm. he directed the first one.
The last one.
If, yeah, there you go. And the last one. And Brian Henson was the other
yeah.
director to have done so.
Mm-hmm. That's good to note.
Yeah.
So yeah. I enjoyed the Caper really movie. It was fun. I think it was, again, it's I allowed that it went bigger in scope. We got to see different places and all that kind of stuff. So you get a lot of production value just for fun. It's like, oh, look, yeah, we're in London. I mean, Dublin now. All that kind of stuff. Go ahead.
I want to get into a little bit about the three human leads of this film. I think that, I mean, Muppet
okay.
characters have their arcs, but they're mm-hmm. pretty consistent. And mm-hmm. the reason the movies work so well is because people have formed attachments mm-hmm. to each of them.
It's, they have the yeah. same arc every movie. But so let's move on. The Muppets.
They're easy to cling to.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they always have to add the hosts.
Mm-hmm.
And the
mm-hmm.
hosts of this movie were very much Ricky Gervais, Ty Burrell, and Tina Fey.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting because... You know, each of them comes from comedic backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
but in my opinion, very different, you know, sectors.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tina Fey's that she's awkward, smart, mm-hmm. SNL sketch comedy. Ricky Gervais often plays the straight-faced, very intellectual-based. And then mm-hmm. you've got Ty Burrell, who's just...
He's a clown.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's fine.
And so you get the three of them doing their own part, and I just wanted to get your reactions on how you thought they did in this world and in this type in the Muppet comedies.
I thoroughly enjoyed them. First of all, I thought it was great that Ricky said yes. It's like, oh, you're gonna do? Is he really gonna do a song and dance number? Really?
Right.
And I haven't seen him do that. I'm not saying he doesn't do it well. If he hasn't in his past, I don't know. I'm just saying I don't know him of that. So anyway, I thought it was great to see him to do it. That he took the risk to.
Did any of them steal the show for you?
Oh, they all did in moments. I mean, Tina Fey's first number, I mean, I thought that was great.
Yeah, I felt like Tina Fey's character stole it most for me mm-hmm. because she had more numbers and more yeah. performances. And mm-hmm. I watched all of 30 Rock, so I mm-hmm. love Tina Fey. And she's just a great actor, great writer. And so there were some moments where I felt that they probably kept that line in because that was complete improv on her part. So mm-hmm. I kind of felt that her comedy throughout. And Ty Burrell from Modern Family, mm-hmm. he's really funny in that way. So I felt like they brought their own comedic sense of humor to the movie that allow the audience, the adult audience, mm-hmm. to enjoy. And they, yes, like you said, they all had their standalone moments. But I enjoyed Tina Fey the most out of all of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't say that. I mean, I enjoyed them all, but there wasn't one that stood out for me. I mean, I really liked Tina. I liked all their numbers. I mean, even Ty Burrell and his number with the eagle, Sam. So yeah. When their first number in there, I mean, that was such a ridiculous number. So
yeah, I
that was fun numbers.
Yeah. Awesome. I think ridiculous both, is in fun ways.
But yeah.
They both lent, they all lent their comedy very well. And I think that Ty and Tina seemed very, very invested. Mm-hmm. And then for me, Ricky Gervais, he is such an interesting comedy because, like, I had not seen him sing and dance yeah, before either. Mm-hmm. I think that he actually had been brought in on a deleted scene from the 2011 Muppets movie.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's how he got brought into this one. Uh-huh. But for me, at first I was watching it and I was just like, oh my gosh,
yeah.
Never go on Broadway. Never go on Broadway. Because, like, you know, in musical theater, you have to yeah. be very animated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, it's about making the most ridiculous things the most important things in the mm-hmm. world. Like, you love this flower so much, you would do anything. Like, it's crazy. And at first, I was just like, he's almost too smart for Broadway mm-hmm. or too smart for, like, the musical theater actors. But then it turned in as the song progressed to, like, this very endearing quality mm-hmm. to his performance where he would, like, throw in the smile and, like, the 1.2. And I was like, this is so sweet. And, like, he's trying. And it's not your typical, uh-huh. like, over-the-top theatrics.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt the same thing when he started out. I'm going, I don't know if he's going to pull this off.
Yeah.
I was very scared it was going to go down the road of
yeah.
like, if anyone's seen the musical Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. There's a couple actors in there where you're just like,
but it didn't. Yeah, exactly. And I yeah. was worried. I have mm-hmm. to say, I was like, oh, my. Oh. But then I felt the same way. By the end of the song, I was going, good. I was rooting for him, and I was so happy that he did it. He took the risk, and it worked.
Yeah. It's because of an endearing yeah. nature. There was something. There was, like, a little bit of a kind.
He brought something that I hadn't seen from him, and I mm-hmm. go, well, good for him.
I agree, and especially with Ricky Gervais. I've seen him more when he's had hosted, like, big award shows and stuff yeah. like that. Like, I think we as an audience have mm-hmm. seen him on the more offensive side mm-hmm. for the
very
adults.
Biting.
Yeah, very. And I was worried that he might have brought that into this movie, but I'm like, you got to remember this is a kid's movie. You got to keep it clean. So I was kind of worried yeah. about his character if he was going to go in that borderline.
But he was always,
way.
That's why to me, he's you know, when they're like Mr. Bad Guy,
mm-hmm. right.
I knew from the get-go, okay, they're playing to him, you know, mm-hmm. and you want to talk about the intelligence factor of it. It's almost like Joe Pantoliano playing a good guy ultimately in Memento. You know, they're right. playing on the stereotype, and mm-hmm. here they're playing on the stereotype of, like, for the most part, Ricky Gervais is a despicable character in movies, and mm-hmm. you know, think of Stardust, remember?
Yeah.
I mean,
what was the other movie that he was in? Year One, right? He's kind of a despicable mm-hmm. guy in that.
Yeah,
I think that in general, people would definitely agree with that assessment. I guess I was thrown off most and more convinced that maybe he was going to be a good guy. Because my most recent interaction with Ricky Gervais is with his series that was on Netflix called Derek.
Right.
Which is spectacular for those mm-hmm. of you who haven't watched it. But in it, he is so good-natured mm-hmm. and sweet-hearted and does not play up the intelligence factor at all. In fact, mm-hmm. he's playing someone who does suffer with somewhat of a, you know,
let's just
disability.
Say he's not smart.
Yeah. And so that's where I was like, oh, maybe mm-hmm. they're going to play on that good nature of the character versus, you know, his typical public appearance. I think that's where a lot of my internal debate with, like, mm-hmm. I wanted him to be good in the end. I, like, wanted it to all be Constantine.
Well, I think that also, let's not forget, that Constantine had to be number one, so he had to be the most mm-hmm. evil, and the lemur in disguise had to be number two, so he couldn't be as evil. So that worked in terms of story-wise, too.
And I think that helped for the audience to feel for him a bit more, because he wants to, he's trying to be the bad guy, but he can't. And then we're like, oh, poor guy. He can't do it.
Well, I just felt bad for him when he came up in his lemur outfit. I was, oh, it was so pathetic. I felt bad for him.
Right.
That's your outfit?
I lost a little pity after the use of the creepy babies.
Yeah, they were very creepy.
The creepy babies.
I don't know where they came from.
They were creepy.
They were borderline Chucky.
They reminded me of, like, if you took, like, a potato and, like, mushed it.
No, what's the apples that or like shriveled
like,
apple
no,
kind
like
of?
The potato meshed with, like, the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Yeah.
That was the point. Who, you know, they said, like, who wouldn't like babies or something like that.
Creepy babies.
And that was the point, though. That you know, again, who, if you take the line, and I don't know if this is verbatim, but like, who wouldn't like babies? Mm-hmm. And then to throw in these ugly babies, like,
yeah,
you
exactly.
know what, maybe not all babies are cute.
Well,
speaking of Constantine, and actually Tina Fey as well, Matt Vogel, who played Constantine, the two of them really worked on their dialogue.
Dialects.
Mm-hmm. There you go with an acting coach.
Poor Nate.
I loved Matt Vogel. I mean, I don't know how it wasn't. Who knows if he was accurate? I don't know Russian. I don't speak it. So, but I don't care. I thought it was great. I love that he sang it and his accent was still there and the singing too. Because sometimes that you don't hear that. I enjoyed it fully. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous in a fun way.
I think that it was very very you know. Very, very stereotypical.
Yeah, it was
Russian
Boris, kind of from
like,
Bullwinkle.
Like, let's make this as big as
yeah,
possible.
Let's go,
like,
yeah.
Crazy. But, so I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really funny.
Great.
I thought that I agree with the singing part, especially on Matt Vogel's part.
Yeah.
Tina Fey's voice throughout this movie changed, like,
so many times.
Yeah.
But to the point that it was humorous.
Yeah.
I feel like if I listened just to her singing parts on a soundtrack, I'd be like, how many voices do we have here?
Yeah.
And that's what Tina Fey, because watching her from SNL and 30 Rock, her character that she tends to play tends to break out in different accents. And she would break out in German all the time in 30 Rock. So I felt some German accent into that along with the Russian. And then, like, whatever.
I don't know
she
why
from.
I give it, because you know, normally I'd be a stickler and all that stuff. But I gave it all a pass because I was just enjoying it so much.
Because you're in
the
Muppet movie.
Yeah.
They can do that.
That's what I'm saying.
It's
they give away with so much because it's like, okay, she dropped out of her. But I don't care.
But it's the Muppets. And and there's also such an awareness of, and they embrace it that their hosts and their humans are in fact cameo
because it's not, you never for a second don't go, oh, that's Tina Fey pretending to be a Russian gulag guard.
Exactly.
You never,
and like you see it and like with like their use of Danny Trejo,
forget it, or Ray Liotta for crying, Ray Liotta doing song and dance, like what the,
everyone's giving their own real life names.
Who's your favorite cameo? Because we had the Christoph Waltz one was funny. In the first one, I really loved Jim Parsons, you know, but again, that's the first movie. In this one, I'm trying to think of who my favorite would be. Christoph Waltz is funny to me because, you know, he's now known as such a great supporting actor.
Yeah.
To have him come out and just be ridiculous was funny.
You know,
so he might have been the one.
Right. And one that I found really funny was Salma Hayek in this movie because they were in Spain, but Salma Hayek is actually from
Mexico. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I can understand maybe the Spanish-Mexican heritage.
Well, she works with
Almodovar
sometimes, right?
Oh, maybe that's it. Yeah, but I'm like, I would have gone with Penelope Cruz. She's from Spain.
Yeah.
So,
but
she was still fun.
And, like,
so, yeah.
Probably
in fact, that would have been funny if she said, look, I'm not.
Yeah, that like to throw that humor in there. And I'm just a fan of Salma Hayek. So I'm like, but she's Mexican. And they're in Madrid right now.
That's true. Did you have a favorite cameo?
I think mine's probably going to be handed to Christoph Waltz as well, just because I love him so much. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, he makes me happy when he's on the screen. On top of that, I know that he was originally set to play the Interpol officer in this film. Mm-hmm. And then because of scheduling conflicts, he wasn't able to. So the fact they still included him and that he still like wanted to, you know, throw in a dime and be a part of it, I was engaged by that. And it was fun to watch him waltz because I just do like picture him in that setting, not with the giant Muppet as his partner, but like he's very elegant and very.
Here's the nice part about it, you know, speaking of all these cameos, because of the culture of the Muppets,
yeah,
that, you know, it's A, an honor to be asked, and B,
yeah,
a lot of people are like, oh, I'll be, yeah,
absolutely, because yeah, they know no matter what I, cause everybody who's in them looks great, comes across great. There's no downside to being in a Muppet. Everybody knows that, and you're gonna spend what, one, maybe 2 days doing this. Yeah, everybody wants to do it.
Yeah, of course. It's like,
and as you're watching the movie, you know they're coming. So you as an audience, I'm going, oh, they, and you have a great time when they come on set or come on frame, because you're going, hey, that's so and so,
and then because, when you don't recognize someone,
yeah,
it becomes very strange.
Yeah,
it's like, what? Like, for me, I did not recognize the young florist, who is actually the blonde guy.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he's mm-hmm. actually a Disney Channel star. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was very much for
yeah.
the
yeah, sure.
Muppet Tween. Audience, exactly, mm-hmm. who, like, watched this. But, like, for me, I was like, wait, who is this?
Yeah, I knew it was a cameo. I was like, I don't know who that is, but like, congratulations, you're in the movie.
It's like, yeah, what did you do? How did you get here? And that's always, that was very funny and shocking to me. I was like, that I didn't recognize one of the cameos.
Yeah, a cameo you didn't recognize.
I find it funny like, that they had a lot of singing artist cameos mm-hmm. as well. We had, you know, P. Diddy.
Right.
Sean Combs.
Usher.
And then Usher.
Lady Gaga.
So mm-hmm. we had
Celine
all
Dion.
These different, definitely Celine Dion. And Celine Dion even got that number with Piggy, mm-hmm. and she was harmonizing. I was like, wow, they're really using her.
And Piggy, there was parts where I thought that Celine Dion actually is going to take my cameo vote. I'm changing it.
Oh, okay.
Celine Dion. I didn't think that anyone could overwhelm Celine Dion's singing voice, like, ever.
Overwhelm in a good way?
No. But, like, I always figured if you put her in a duet, no matter what, mm-hmm. she was the voice you were going to hear.
Ah,
and I was like, Celine, where's Celine's voice? I can only hear Miss Piggy.
Miss Piggy's got a bigger voice.
I was shocked.
Wow.
Let me ask you guys this. Were you guys missing Amy and Jason? You
know, I was.
Because they were so tied into the first one, and where this picked up exactly where the first one left off, I thought right at the top, at the very least,
yeah.
we had a little bit of a cameo.
We saw their backs. They're stand-ins. You know, I honestly didn't. I don't know why, but I honestly didn't.
I think... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I miss Jason Segel because we know he was so involved with the first mm-hmm. one, with writing, and he helped get all these people back in for the first movie back mm-hmm. in 2011. And then when I found out that he wasn't part of this one, because they did ask him to come mm-hmm. back, but he's like, no, I already fulfilled my dream and rebooted Muppets. And he's like, I'm done. You know, I'm happy mm-hmm. with what I did. And then him agreeing not to come back for the second one, I thought that was very telling. I'm like, but this is your project, and, you know, keep it going. Mm-hmm. And I missed his presence. I missed his humor that he brought to it.
I'm on John's side. Not that I didn't want to see them, and I thought it would have been a cute cameo for mm-hmm. them to be mentioned. I didn't miss them, though. And I think that's because my investment for this franchise doesn't come from the 2011 film. Mm-hmm. It comes from something where they weren't mm-hmm. included. And, like, to me, it would only be really destroyed if you took, like, Kermit out, or, mm-hmm. like, some of the Muppets. Like, mm-hmm. that's what would be confusing to me. Them taking the humans out, not too much of a factor.
Well,
like, it's
for me,
because they've had so many people
come in.
That's
one of the things that's great about the Muppets is that you can bring new people in and they still work.
Yeah. And so
it doesn't rely on the human.
I don't think it ever should.
No, it shouldn't.
And I think it was a very good point for him to be like, you know, I did my part for the Muppets, mm-hmm. but this isn't a Jason Segel movie.
Yeah, because
this isn't
yeah.
a Jason Segel franchise.
I guess that's what I was saying.
It's a Muppet franchise, mm-hmm. so you need to make that detachment. Mm-hmm. Am I opposed to them putting him as a cameo jump in?
No.
If he jumps in the future, won't bother me at all. It will be a nice nod.
I was really surprised that he didn't make the cameo.
Yeah.
Like you.
That we didn't get to see him at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
Who knows?
Well, apparently Ray Liotta is the, according to this, the only person to get two cameos.
He got two?
Once was in Muppets from Space.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, nice.
You go, Ray Liotta.
He wasn't really.
It was fun seeing him like that.
I mean, he was because he had more of a role in this. But if I had to pick one, just because he did it, I'm giving my cameo to Ray Liotta just because it's just so bizarre to see
in that light.
Yeah,
I agree.
And, you know, Danny too, Danny Trejo. So, but for whatever reason, Ray stuck out to me more.
I think another fun cameo, maybe not my favorite, but was Josh Groban
being stuck in the hole.
The solitude guy. Because the first time we always hear him sing, and I'm like, that's definitely Josh Groban.
See, I couldn't quite tell the first time. Did you know right away?
Okay, right away.
Who is that? Hugh Jackman? Who the hell is that?
Yeah, exactly. So. Like, I know Josh Groban.
I wanted him to stay in the box, though. I didn't want the reveal. I wanted, like, a name.
I needed the reveal, so I appreciated it.
I was like, nope, I know it's Josh Groban.
For a second, I honestly thought, is that Hugh Jackman? And I thought, they're going to have Wolverine come out of that thing.
That would have been awesome.
I thought he was actually in Wolverine.
That's what I mean. I thought it was hysterical. Like, him in Wolverine singing with the claws. I'm going, that would have been amazing. Would have been amazing.
Oh, my God. Next time. Yeah, next time. Josh Groban will get a partner in the gulag.
For the next movie.
Yeah, but that was a great reveal for me because it was, it's Josh. Yeah, that was nice.
No, I think that overall, did you think it was too heavy on the cameos? Because I know that there's been some criticism out there about, you know, kind of being taken over, especially by adults and about by famous movie stars.
No, because for most part, the cameos are so quick and, you know, they're just one lines or look, it's like the flower. What is it? He goes, hey, you knew? Okay, here. And that's it.
Yeah.
And so, you just get a nice little taste of who it is. Now, the roles like for Tina and Ty and Gervais, those ones, I still, as much as we saw them, they each had their numbers, I still didn't think it overwhelmed the piece. And I still had a lot of the Muppets, and I'm sure Phil will agree, probably too much Peggy. Because, you know, I still, you know, Animal had his nice moment. I mean, but I still missed some moments with some of the, you know, like, I can't remember his name, but I always call him Pepe the Prawn. What's his name?
Pepe the Prawn.
Yeah, that's what I call it, but I don't
know. The shrimp? Which one?
The shrimp, yeah. I keep forgetting his name. But, you know, like him, I wanted some more moments with some Muppets. But there's so many Muppets. How do you have them all have their...
I'm so bad with Muppet names because I always just refer to them how they look. Because I think that's like what most kids do.
Yeah, sure.
That's a car ram. So you're just like... The shaggy huge one. I'm like, animal. Like,
exactly.
But that's just how I refer to them. And I'm like, don't say that on air.
Because
people think, but I'm like, that's just the childhood aspect. Yeah. I'm like, you don't really care. You just refer to them. It's like, that's why they get names. Okay,
honestly, I don't know every member of the band. I know the sax player. That's how I call him. I call him the sax player.
Right. Exactly.
But they all had their moments, though. I mean, Animal got his drum solo. Mm-hmm. And then we had Grover.
And Animal, you know, actually figured out Constantine, so he actually had a little bit story too.
What I like
is a bad frog. Go ahead.
I like, you know, if we're talking about the actual Muppets, what was nice is, you know, how do you give everyone a storyline?
Yeah.
And the nice way that they tied it in for the older audience was like, hey, I want to do this, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And so each one of them wanted to expand the act.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of got a little bit of their personalities just in that way, mm-hmm. which was enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I was a little fooled with, I think that another thing I liked about this with the plot devices and twists and turns mm-hmm. was there was a couple minutes where I was very convinced the direction the film was going to them being not needing Kermit and that their mm-hmm. show was actually being a success mm-hmm. and not being like paid off. And to me, it was really sad.
Oh, because Kermit was left behind and they were
being more successful without Kermit.
Wow.
And I was literally like, what is going to happen? And that's where I thought this whole thing was going. Mm-hmm. So when they brought in that they were being bribed, I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, Kermit can come back.
So you didn't have to worry about that emotional investment. That's nice.
I completely agree because I'm like, when they saw that when Kermit was gone and they didn't realize that, it was like, we know as an audience and we've come attached to Kermit, and it was surprising that his friends didn't even realize mm-hmm. that this wasn't Kermit. And after all these years and all these movies, how they couldn't understand that and comprehend that this isn't their friend.
Yeah.
It was
nice because, you know, they were so caught up in their own
success.
For the first time ever, they got to do their own thing and mm-hmm. seemingly they had success. The only people that kind of disputed that was the two critics of like, wow, hard to believe that it even got worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what prompted me to say this was something Marissa was saying, but the fact that Kermit, their own friends didn't recognize him. But I thought they even played that off well because, I mean, let's face it, Clark Kent and Superman, set of glasses and a little hair flip on the other side. I mean, what the? So, but with the avocado falling and the Muppets just not being bright enough to realize it. But I liked that they got caught up in their own success and who cares? And it wasn't until they realized, wait a minute, what are we doing here? So that worked story-wise, too. I thought that worked.
And one of my things is just that it's so hard to pinpoint my favorite scene in this film.
Yeah, I can't.
That's so difficult, and that's such a wonderful place to be at. Mm-hmm. Like, I was trying to come up with it. I was just like, whether it's, like, just the fact when they were interviewing them and interrogating the police station. And to me, that's what puts forth the fact number? That this could be a reality. Mm-hmm. Like, that's such, like, to me, it was such a well-timed and well-meant scene. Mm-hmm. Because it shows, like, how these crooks are getting away with these crimes behind the Muppets' back and, like, mm-hmm. how good the nature of the Muppets is. And it also brings you closer to the characters. But throughout the film, there's so many good moments. There's so many laughs that it's hard to pinpoint what you like the most.
Yeah, well, my audience had a great time with it. They were laughing throughout and good belly laughs. It wasn't just, hey, that's cute.
Yeah.
So did you guys have that same experience?
I saw this in a matinee in the very empty theater. mostly because not because of people not going to theater, but just
early showing on a weekday.
Random weekday showing, yeah. Mm. And it's very funny to you because when you go see movies at that time, it's very hard to get reactions out of people.
Yeah.
And we still had in maybe the 10, 12 people in the audience, we still had people laughing.
Yeah.
And like myself included. And I was just like, that's really nice because I think when you do end up in a movie theater, basically, so like with just a few people, you're more aware, and you can be more embarrassed.
And comedy's
you're more
infectious,
judging. And so the fact that people were still laughing through the emptiness, I was like, haha! If I knew that if I was in a packed theater, it would have been crazy.
Yeah, I had full theater, and they were just laughing throughout.
I went to a Friday or Saturday night full performance with it. There was. The older generation and the kids, because it was still early enough for the kids to go watch it. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy next to me who laughed throughout the whole thing. So, I mean, a lot of people had hearty laughs, and it still, you know, generated that humor between everyone. And it was a good audience and good reactions out of everybody.
Yeah. Now, Sarah, you were talking about what moment, and when I'm thinking about the numbers that they did, you know, even the opening number of the sequel's never as good, just because it was so cheeky and they were so self, you know, referential about it. That made me laugh. And then I think of the Gulag with Tina and her opening song and just the wordplay in it and seeing all the guys in the background and dancing and then later on when we go back to we're doing the you know, the chorus line number in the Gulag.
That was awesome.
And then you just mentioned the one where we're doing the interrogation of all the Muppets. That was a great number. And then you have Constantine's wooing of Miss Piggy and that ridiculous
cheese.
Yeah, but it was great cheese. I mean, I can't even pick out what number I liked best.
Yeah, they were very, all fun in their own way. Yeah.
Very well-structured movie with laughs and with connections, and I think that's why it's successful. It makes me want to go rewatch the 2011 Muppets because so many people are comparing this to that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah, that's what I think it's been a lot out there. It's and it is good that they self-addressed it at the beginning of this film because they knew it was going to happen.
Yeah,
and it's true. It's like people just want to compare and compare and compare, and so, and part of me wants to go back, but I think it all works. And I think that the feeling I left with was happiness and laughter and joy. And
I want to go back just to hear this show again, this movie, because a lot of the numbers, they're very quick. And a lot of the lines and the lyrics and the songs I was missing just because, like, wait, what did he say? I couldn't quite understand that. And there were laugh lines in those that I missed because I was laughing at something and I mixed the next
and
laugh
you
line.
Lost the next else. Thing.
So I'm going to have to see it again.
No, definitely.
So.
Well, I can understand why people would compare it to the 2011, because if you think about it, these two movies only came out within 4 years of each other, and the movies before that, it had a good decade in between. So you're going to compare it to the one that just recently came out most recent. But, you know, I don't mind that, because it's still the people who watched the 2011 still watch this one, and they're still kind of in the same age demographic. Mm-hmm. So it, I don't think that helped or hindered them in any way.
Mm-hmm. Have they ever made, sorry, this is totally a side note. Does anyone know, and Phil might be able to research this, have they ever had like have they had any recent like live, almost like Broadway type Muppet performances? Because I think that with like the success of Avenue Q, things like that, and I mean, the Muppets is basically SNL meets like Avenue Q, and I think it could be very adaptable to stage right now, and mm-hmm. especially how they present it in these movies. And I'm just interested if I wonder if they ever are looking to go in that direction.
I think they could though if they were planning on going, because we have the two critics. Mm-hmm. Muppets, and we've seen them, they perform in theater, technically mm-hmm. on stage, so it is towards that demographic, people who like to go to the theater and watch the live productions like that. So I don't see why they would have any problem
adapting it to theater. Next stage of the Muppets, I think that they need to bring it to a live.
Yeah, this is the logistical thing of, because I don't want to see the person, as opposed to Avenue Q, when you actually see the person you know, operating.
I don't
want to see any of that. I like not seeing that.
He's like, you like to keep the...
Yeah, keep the illusion, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to see the person operating it.
I enjoy both, because I respect both different types of productions. Like,
absolutely. I respect him. I just don't want to see where the Muppets.
Yeah.
He just has his lines about what he likes.
I mean, I think it's great. You see, you know, in Avenue Q, even in Lion King, you see all the people and the performers and stuff like that. And I think that's fabulous. It's very interesting and dynamic and theatrical. I want to still have my animal be an animal, and I don't want to see the person operating his arms.
You don't want to see the one hand?
No, don't want to see that.
Do you know that most Muppets are actually left-handed because the operators use their right hand for main movement? So most Muppets are left-handed.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Yeah.
So they have a left hand?
No, because the
Muppeteer
using their right hand for movements. They're typically using their left.
The Muppet is actually left-handed.
The Muppet actually becomes left-handed.
Good to know.
Yeah. And also,
so you can now become.
I can't wait to tell people, left-handed people, that you're a Muppet.
And also, Piggy is one of the heaviest Muppets to operate. And
clearly,
yeah, because you know she's bigger and she has more outfits on top of her compared to everyone
and
else.
And how many outfits did she have in this film?
Too many.
I know. It was like Sex and the City.
There were so many outfits, and they were very detailed. Also, I wanted most of them.
Tamara, my wife, we sat together. She goes, "Did you see the jewelry on her?" I went, "No, I wasn't paying attention." She goes, "Yeah, this is pretty good jewelry on her."
Like, she had quite the wardrobe.
Did she?
I wanted them. I said, also, Piggy had a very, she was very shapely. In this film,
she's rounded. That either.
No, you didn't notice that.
She had a figure on her?
Yeah, I felt like
very Rubenesque.
Kirby.
To me, she just looked a little bit different than she had in like the originals. I don't know if it was just like the focus of everything, but she to me, her puppet looked a little bit different.
It might have been the outfits.
It could have been with her fantastic wardrobe.
Yeah, but I read in an interview that Eric Johnson, the Muppeteer for Piggy, that they had to take a lot of breaks in between because his arm would get tired just working with Piggy.
I can imagine. I get tired when I do my hair. Imagine.
Yeah. compared to the other puppets who would.
You don't understand.
No, I don't. But thank you for putting it in context. I get it now.
No, I completely get that too. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. No, I mean, the people are just so attached, and I think that it's interesting when you look through the characters that they portray, how many voices they're doing, how many they're available to switch, how many characters they know.
Did you watch the credits? Because I specifically stayed because I wanted to see, who's doing what voice, and it's amazing how many Matt does, and I'm sorry, I don't know who you said, Ms.
Eric
Piggy.
Johnson.
Yeah, I just went,
Steve
Eric Jacobson, I'm sorry.
It was incredible.
And how they balance that in filmmaking being able to switch between puppets and between voices and maintaining timing is very difficult. Right. Like, for half these scenes, it could very much them be acting with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm wondering if they reshot it. I mean, they do different takes, or if they have somebody else just doing all the handwork and then they just doing the voice. Because it's a different, it's a different person. I mean, there is a different personality. If somebody, two different Muppeteers are going to create a slightly different personality.
Definitely. Yeah. And being able to, as the actor, to switch the voice and switch perspective that quickly. I might have to do a little more research into this and fill the audience and fill you, those listening in later, because that's a crazy art.
Yes.
So you have to like put nods to them, those Muppeteers. Like,
I know, but just the idea that that's what the career you're going into. Right there, I'm going, wow, okay. I mean, that's just, that's a commitment. Because, I mean, what's the likelihood that that's going to work out for you? But they do such amazing work, and they really – look, let's face it. If they didn't do such good work, we as humans would not connect with these characters in any way. We wouldn't – they wouldn't have the longevity that they do, and they wouldn't have people just continually coming to see them and wanting to be part of their lives.
It's very, very true. I mean, I'm looking up, like, Steve Whitmer right now, and he's famous for doing Kermit. He also does – he does – tons of the voices, and he's been around these characters for years, just continuously playing Kermit and doing, like, I'm trying to see what his earliest film was, but he's going all the way back to before, like, 2007. So the relationship they've built, just continuously playing them, I think that that's probably the best part. It's just like flipping around and being able to stay connected to a character for decades and so long.
And if you think about it, I mean, Sesame Street, all created by, because Muppets and Sesame Street, all created by Jim Henson. Mm-hmm. And Sesame Street is an ongoing thing. It's still going. It's been around since late 60s. But we still connect to those characters as well. And they're weekly.
Because they've imprinted.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been imprinted on
But they do new scenes and new episodes every week. I mean, we see the Muppets every few years, but Sesame Street is like every week, and we're still attached to them.
Were you guys old enough to see the Muppet Show when it was on?
I mean, a little bit, but not. I was more of a Sesame Street kid.
Mm. Same here. I was more Sesame Street, but I have seen the Muppets on DVD.
I was more of a movie Muppeter.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to ask is, because we're now going to get more into the movie part of this, let's talk about the editing, pacing, and et cetera. Did you guys have – what was your feeling about that? Because I know you guys said you liked the story. You had no problems with the storyline, but how did you feel as the movie rolled out?
Absolutely. I think that they did a very good mix of, like – because in editing and in visual presentation, with doing a more world-based movie instead of generally just focusing on a stage, they did have to create each country like as they did it. And to me, with the aspects of especially using the train as a constant to bring together these different cities, and then going very much just by, in a way this movie is carried, I think, primarily it's character driven and actor driven, but also establishing like Dublin and Germany and the use of the map and the cutting between then, and using those glimpses of continuity, especially with the train, to me really helps set up that consistency throughout the film and that tie-in, versus of like, now we're in Berlin, now we're in here, and just flashing between theaters. Taking the time to set up those different countries, to me, gave me a minute to sink in. So that was an aspect that I really liked about how they controlled the filming of location. On top of that, I think that you have to give them props, as you said, to the disguise of, you know, balancing the puppets, which now they've obviously had years and years of practice with actors, and getting those frames right and getting balanced right. And I think that, to me, they did a really good job, because I was never worried about seeing the puppeteer. Like, that didn't...
Imagine watching a movie and you being worried about that. I mean, that's a bad place to be, because then you don't trust the people making the movie.
I feel like the pacing was really well done, especially because we started the movie off with a big number. That's a good way to engross the whole audience into the movie.
Well, in fact, even later on in the movie, Kermit actually says, start off with a good number and then go to the comedy.
Exactly. So, and you got to remember that this... kids are also watching this, so you have to keep their young attention as well throughout the whole thing. And I loved how the spacing of the numbers were very well done in the comedy throughout. When they go from country to country, back and forth, I thought it was really well paced, and it kept my attention as an adult throughout the whole thing. And I think it also, with all the fun numbers, it kept the kids' attention. So I don't think they had any problem like losing anyone in that, especially with everything that was going on.
And still throwing in the unexpected parts of, like, I guess the filmmaking, like when they did transfer Miss Piggy into black and white with Celine Dion. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that was an unexpected twist that I felt it worked. And it's amazing how much cheesiness you will accept.
Yes.
And, like, they get away with.
But that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Done the right way, it's great. Mm-hmm. And because any other way, any other movie, you know, it would be horribly cheesy. We go, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. But they get away with everything.
That's very true.
The context is they have a huge playground to play on in order for us to accept it.
And I think even the cameos were nicely spaced out throughout the movie, too, to keep the audience involved.
Except for, the only part I would argue with that is the opening number, which I loved, but it was so cameo-packed that you were like...
Well, it's interesting because you...
That's where I missed a lot of the lines.
Right.
In that first
time. Yeah, me too.
And that's one thing I would want to go back and say. Mm-hmm. And luckily I had a little bit of a heads up that that song was going to be in there and that it was going to be fun. So I was ready to pay attention. Heads up.
And even in that, the first number, they had the line filled with cameos. So it told the audience, this is what you are to expect in the movie.
That is true. That's true. It's just like a little bit, I was like, oh, so many. Oh, what are they singing about?
The only thing for me is... I thought the pacing was fine, except it at some point, and I can't remember, I think it's after we have the interrogations number, and then we cut to Kermit in the gulag, and that was fine. I think it felt like it was the first time there was any kind of quiet, any kind of...
There was the one moment, I don't know if this is the moment you're talking about, but they're Constantine and Mr. Badke, you know, they're talking, and then... right after that, they're like, okay, we have to go to Madrid, I believe is what it is. Mm-hmm. And instead of going to Madrid immediately then, we cut to Kermit.
Ah.
And for me, I don't know, you know, that was the moment of like, okay, if you say you're going to do something, typically what happens is all of a sudden you end up there. You know, and so it just
so
kind
they
of,
went to Kermit while they were traveling, so to speak.
Yeah, and that was going to be the juggling act for them. It was, you know.
Because they had to cut back and forth to the good look. Mm-hmm. For me, the point I was making... well, not so much. It was just that I realized at some point there was such a frenetic pace that I was like, it was almost like an onslaught. I was like, oh, that's right. Good. Okay, great. Thank you for being quiet for a second. Because I think that part was missing for me was those moments where you could have the pathos of the movie come through a little bit more.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think that it's probably more towards Marissa's point where they do are commanding the audience of children and... You know, they want that high. I think there is a high energy action to this that they want. And to me, it was very high paced, but I wasn't ready for that. Mm-hmm. So I liked the energy of it. Also, I think that most of the slower moments are going to come between Kermit and Piggy. And when you have them separated, you end up with people, you know, very rambunctiously, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, like, with all the big numbers and stuff, you're going to have a lot of people on screen at the same point. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was, like, for all the numbers, there was at least 20, 30 people in each number. But that's what, so when you have more people, you're going to have more energy, more of that engrossing into the number and into the movie. So I can understand why there was too many people on screen at some points where, like, some people might feel that and the overwhelming cast. But, you know, I didn't mind it because it helped me stay paid attention to the movie.
Yeah, it was a lot of balance for me.
Yeah. John wanted to relax.
No, not that at all. I just think that it was frenetic and then nothing. And then frenetic and then I'm going, okay, you could have had a better ride there, is my saying. It's a better alpha wave, let's say, put it that way. So, but that's just me.
I can understand that.
Do you think that... So for this movie, we had it directed by, again, James Bobbin, as you mentioned. And after Muppets 2011, they went pretty much directly into filming this. Like, this one started or was... I know that... The other one came out 2011. I think the proposal for this was maybe pitched or brought up in March 2012. Mm-hmm. And it was approved in April 2012, so a month later, and they already went straight into writing, and I believe that they were I think they were already in like shooting basically 2013. I mean, so
yeah, it was beginning of 2013.
Okay. It was directly after, right into another one. And that was based off a huge success. I don't know if Phil has the numbers. The first one I want to say was over 100 million.
Here's the breakdown.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Get hold on. Let me do it by. Do you want the adjusted? I could do both, I guess. But, do both. All right. So here's the gross numbers, right? So The Muppets 2011, 88 million.
Are you talking budget? Or are you talking
total gross. Grosses? Okay. Grosses. Muppet Movie, 65 million. Muppet Treasure Island, 34 million. Great Muppet Caper, 31 million. Muppet Christmas Carol, 27 million. Muppets Take Manhattan, 25 million. Muppets Most Wanted, according to this website, Box Office Mojo, thus far, 21 million. Muppets from Space, 16 million. Now, adjusted, the Muppet Movie would make 216 million. The Muppets, 94 million. The Muppet Caper, 93 million. Try and keep these numbers in your mind because I'm sure they're right in there. Muppet Treasure Island, 64 million. Muppets Take Manhattan, 63 million. Muppet Christmas Carol, 54 million. Muppets from Space, 27 million. And Muppets Most Wanted, 21 million thus far.
So, I mean, what we're getting from that is like, I mean, still, those are very high numbers.
FYI, those are domestic. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, obviously, the original movies are going to do the best. What I'm wondering is because the reboot, or whatever you want to call it, 2011, was obviously one of the highest numbers they'd seen in years and years and years. And so it was very easy for them to monopolize on that and go straight into the second one. I'm curious as to whether or not this is still on track for a third to progress in like this era, or if it's going to need another
reboot.
Exactly.
I think I'll make a third. I think, I mean... I don't know the budget of this one, but I'm guessing this will make its money. And
budget on this is estimated at $50 million.
So yeah, I'm thinking they might have already even got one in the works. I don't know, meaning pre-pro or writing, but I don't know. I think they would. I think because
here's the thing with it that you guys, I don't know if you guys are not mentioning or just don't know who to include, but like there's also merchandise associated with it. Yeah. So you know, you got to think of it in this world. Think of everything that you can do, you know? So, yes, there's the movie, but the movie is a platform to help fuel all of these different things as well. And so, you know, that's where a lot of revenue can come from as well. And so, I think, you know, it's beneficial.
I'm sure they're trying to do a lot, but are they doing a lot of merchandising on this movie?
I don't know. I haven't been to a toy store to see.
I know. I would imagine that they would try to capitalize crazy on it, but which is a thank you for bringing it up because I think it's that absolutely should be part of the discussion.
I think that the Muppets movie, because to me it's like an advertising of at least the Disney spectrum. Like Muppets has, I believe, its own studio within Disney that manages their business and, you know, their assets and whatnot. But Disney as a corporation, I feel like, while backing this movie, has not really backed the merchandise around it. Versus Maleficent has been getting a ton of publicity for years now. And on top of that, I know that they're pushing like their costumes, and they had very famous designers come in and develop kids' clothes based on Maleficent. And so it's like, to me, I've seen Disney go so far with certain things that I don't think that they've really paid attention to the Muppets as much.
But well, according to the, you know, I'm on DisneyStore.com, so I don't know if this is all the merchandise, but this is the official site, I guess. So there's 55 items you can purchase of the Muppet gear.
How many Maleficent are there?
How many what?
Maleficent. But what you're saying is that you're not aware of them actually pushing this as much as they did Maleficent.
Yeah, at least to my knowledge.
But if you think about it, the Muppets has been around for 40, 50 years now. Mm-hmm. And so that merchandise was probably bigger when they first started out. It was like people who already have the Muppets merchandise. And if they pushed more, it's like, we already have a Kermit. We already have a Piggy.
Yeah, but there's a whole new audience that doesn't. That's why
that audience is very focused on Frozen. At the moment.
Frozen.
Like, Frozen has captured their hearts, and now I feel like for me, what I've seen on the internet and through marketing, it was very much Frozen dominated, and it's switching towards focus on Maleficent. I feel like Muppets got a concentration as being a movie and being a movie full of stars. I do not see it as having the support with digitally, like of the games and the videos and the sing-alongs. Like, to me, it went from Frozen, and the shift I'm seeing, unless they change it or put out more, is towards Maleficent. That's what I'm getting. And, like, I don't know. And I mean, part of that is congratulations, because Frozen literally took over the world somehow.
Frozen's awesome, though. I don't blame them. And Frozen was a more newer concept, and Muppets have been around for decades. So I can understand why they're pushing Frozen, because no one has seen Frozen in that light, in new characters and new storyline. And it's like, we've already seen the Muppets.
That I agree with. It'll be interesting. I mean, it's hard because who's if they have their own studio, if the Muppets have their own studio, and are they competing against Frozen, or is it as a company trying to emphasize whatever they're going to get the most revenue out of? Who knows?
I'm sure they are competing.
Inner factions.
Well, yeah. I mean, not. I'm sure they don't want to be, but I mean, there's only so much, you know, that's going to, your only percentage of whatever dollar is going to go towards those kinds of things. And if they're already taken up by Frozen, there's nothing left over for Muppets.
Yeah.
And to speak to the other point is, you can argue that because the Muppets are known throughout, you already have a market, so go after them. Because it wouldn't be just the people who already own Muppet things, but their children. So you already have a guaranteed audience, which is why people make sequels, because why people make movies out of books. We already have an audience. It's market to them. Exactly. So why they're not capitalizing on it more is very questionable. It could be because we don't want to compete with Frozen. I don't know.
Could be.
It's like, you've got a golden star. Why put up anything that's going to battle it and take away from that audience? It's that effect that, it's like, if you have a superstar, why put someone to rival them when you can get more money off the superstar? I mean, and it's sad because obviously they have a legacy.
It could just be horrible timing. Look, we have Frozen, we have Maleficent, we got, you're right in the middle. Let's tamp that down because we're trying to move this.
And they see opportunities for, I mean, Disney loves their sequels though. And obviously they've built up the potential for like Frozen 2. They can add Muppets, blah, blah, blah.
They're going to do Frozen 2.
What? Did I say that? Who knows? I mean, they have the audience for it, right?
Of course, that's why they will.
But I would go see Frozen 2.
But would you buy the soundtrack for the Muppets?
Muppets? Maybe, maybe not. Probably no, actually. For the Muppets, I mean, they were fun songs and whatnot, but I think they were fun to listen to just a few times, not enough to buy them.
And they're harder to sing.
Yeah.
You know? That's the difficult
thing. I might. No, I'm just, I agree with you. I'm not. I'm just saying that they may be harder to sing, but I would probably buy it. I mean, I still can't get out of Constantine's number. I just thought that was ridiculous. You want a kangaroo? Whatever the heck. I don't even remember the lyrics, but they were just cracking me up. And the gulag number with Tina, I might.
I think that is a point, though. It's like, as funny as I find the music from this movie, because definitely was, you do have to listen to it multiple times before it gets stuck in your head.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's not a Frozen number.
Like,
that
you're like, this is
a not
sequel.
An earworm. Yeah,
something like.
It's also very contextual. You know what I mean? If you just listen to the soundtrack, you'd be like, what? This doesn't make half sense.
Yeah, but if you think about the numbers were mostly sung by the adults. They had the Muppets with them, but it was led by the adults. So, of course, the adults are going to comprehend the lyrics a bit more and remember it. And kids won't latch onto that as easily as the adults
would. But then
would.
Again, yeah, that's probably why I would like this one, because I'm not going to go buy the soundtrack to Frozen. So
you're not?
No, I wouldn't.
To Frozen?
No.
I mean,
I love the thing is, Frozen I don't even need to buy the soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly. It's everywhere.
All in here.
Yeah. But all the songs were catchy in Frozen, and they all had the kind of same soundtrack underneath it. But with Muppets, I found every number sounded different. They had their own sound, their own, like, one was fun and energetic, one was like really clipped and factual, and so there was just different voices to each number. And I feel with Frozen, because we keep comparing it to Frozen, all of them still had the same kind of tone to all those numbers, so it's easier for kids to understand those songs compared to Muppets.
No, that makes. I'm trying to find. Phil, do you have over there who did the soundtrack for this movie?
Sure. Let me pull that up.
But what was your favorite number out of all of them?
That's so difficult.
I said earlier I'm not able to pick one out because I just. I truly liked them for different reasons, but not one over the other.
I will have to go with Constantine and Ricky Gervais's number about 1 and 2.
1 and 2.
Just because to me it was the most surprising, and mm-hmm. it had the biggest effect on me because I started off like with the...
yeah, trepidation.
Oh my gosh, what is this? What am I watching? Yeah. What's going to happen?
Yeah.
And then it won me over, and I thought that was really sweet. And I liked that Ricky Gervais, how he approached it. So I would definitely give it to that.
So the music was done by Christopher Beck, who has done Hangover, Frozen, Crazy Stupid Love.
There you go. And he's done Buffy.
Runner, R.I.D.P., The Internship, Movie 43. Wow, this guy's done a lot.
Okay.
The Watch, Pitch Perfect. Should I keep going?
No, that's good.
I haven't gotten to 2011 yet.
Yeah, Christopher Beck, he's done a lot of music.
Crazy guy.
But I'd say for my favorite one, probably the most surprising one, was the interrogation song. Because I thought overall it was done so well and so fast-paced and intellectual, and just how they interrogated each different Muppet in different ways.
Yep.
I thought that was well done. The timing was spectacular. It really matched with the editing back and forth between everyone. I thought it was surprising. It was really fun to watch. Between Napoleon and Eagle, so you got both of their one version of interrogation compared to the other, like the bad guy, good guy. I thought overall as a number, it was the most entertaining.
Phil, I'm sure your favorite was Miss Piggy singing with Celine.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And actually, you know what? I did enjoy that because it showed the absurdity of Miss Piggy, and when we do that, I'm glad.
Yeah. All right.
I think that as like the number Marissa mentioned, really exemplified the choreography that goes into the movies, a movie like this, and the intellect and the specificity involved. I can't say that
specificity.
Word. Thank you. It's still laughing at me. No, but I think that was a very good example of that, and how much thought that the timing goes into, and the camera work matching with the lyrics, matching with everything. Like, there's so many things that have to be in order, and I think that film did a good job of balancing that all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we have to wrap up, so let's get to last words and last thoughts. Anything? Oh. Phil, you want to start us off on that?
Overall, you know, I really did enjoy it. You know, for me, I would have, in some sense, liked to see it be a little bit more serialized, like where we saw Amy Adams and Jason in the first one. You know, I would have liked to see a little bit of carry through, but I guess, you know what? I'm in the minority, so I'm okay with that. I did thoroughly enjoy it. I really wish, you know, let's figure out in the next movie how to swap out Miss Piggy. But apart from that, I love the rest of the Muppets.
I think that it was fun and funny and something that's definitely a family film, which is the goal. And on top of that, I think that for Phil's sake, that the next expansion can be the genre of horror. And it will be... Who knows? Bye bye, Miss Piggy. Ooh. No, that's a little dark. But
just a little.
This is what I'm envisioning.
Mm-hmm.
I love musical movies and stuff, and this felt like a musical, and it had the audience, the older and the younger. It made me want to go back and watch the whole Muppet franchise and go back and watch the older movies because there were so many references back to them. I was like, I don't remember that happening, but so now I have to go back and watch them. And just keeping the franchise going. I mean, the Muppets, they're not human and they are Muppets, they can't die. So their legacy is going to go on and on and on.
They can't die.
Sorry, Phil.
It's the next movie. They can't die. Zombies. That's a big thing now.
Like, so
that's right.
Maybe Hunger Games. Divergent. Let's put the Muppets in there.
On and on, and we're gonna go back and watch them over and over again. So I want to watch the older versions of Muppets.
That fun makes movie. Sense.
I think it delivers on everything that a Muppet movie is supposed to deliver on. It's got great numbers in it. It has great cameos in it. There's laughter. It hits a lot of demographics. So, I think that song is playing us out.
Yeah. And this is going to be stuck in your head for the rest of the day.
Yeah, there's an earworm for you. Stuck in my head. Well, Phil, where should people contact us when they want to let us know what's up?
Well, follow us here on Twitter at Movie Anatomy. For more of your favorite dissections, go to anatomyofamovie.com. And hey, we've been spreading the word. One of the greatest things that you guys can honestly do in return for what we do here is to just continue the conversation, one, because we enjoy it. We love hearing your guys' opinion. That's why we love and do what we do, is because we just love the movies and we love talking about it, the movies, with anybody. And secondly, by doing that, it obviously helps spread the word, and the more we can build this community, the more fun it can be. This song.
I just can't listen to Phil. Yeah, I know, Sarah.
You're not watching me again.
Song.
Sarah's dancing once again.
I just really like this
song. What's
Manamana.
Last words, ladies.
Great movie. Go definitely take your kids to go watch this.
Manamana.
There you go. And on that note, we'll say goodbye. Thanks very much for listening. We will talk to you next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.